Hey, this is Scott Snyder. I'm writing All-Star Batman this year, and you're listening to the Comic Syndicate.
I'm Mitch Gerrans, the artist of Sheriff of Babylon.
I'm Tom King, the writer of Sheriff of Babylon, and you're listening to the Comic Syndicate.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, and you're listening to the Comics Syndicate.
Hi, my name is Brian Bucciolato, and I listen to Comic Syndicate.
Hi, this is Chris Michello. We're hanging out here at Frank and Sons, and we're having a good time on a Sunday or Saturday afternoon. And you're listening to me live on the Comic Syndicate.
Hi, this is Brian Michael Bendis, and you are listening to the Comic Syndicate.
Comic Talk.
Welcome to a very special presentation of the Comic Syndicate. This is going to be an interview that I got to conduct at the San Diego Comic-Con 2019 a few months ago. So it's going to be a special Batman Beyond interview. So I got to interview the cast, which the writers, the directors, the voice actor, director, I guess, Andrea Romano, who's dope, and she's worked on so many things. I got to interview Will Friedle, who plays Terry McGinnis, who is Batman Beyond, and got to interview Kevin Conroy, who plays Bruce Wayne / Batman. The show originally came out January 10th, 1999, and it ran through December 1st, 2001. So this year, 2019 marks its 20th anniversary, and we got to interview these cats. They were nice. They were sweet. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I had a blast conducting these interviews with this group. It kind of got towards the end. It's a long interview because, again, so many people, but we got a lot of good people that gave us good content. And then towards the end, I think we got an odd dude where we could not pull anything out of this person. So bear with it. That's let me know what you guys think about each of these people. If you guys want to hit me up on the side, like, okay, she was really dope, he was really dope, he was very informative, Wolf Friedel sounds like a nice guy, please hit me up on the side. I'm at For the Villain on Twitter, at Comic_Syndicate on Instagram. Again, I love doing these. It's a lot of work, and it's cool. It's San Diego Comic Con. I thought I would sit on this one because this month the DVD box set for Batman Beyond drops, which I should have checked that. It's going to be October 14th or 19th. So within the next few weeks, I think it might be the 19th. Yeah, so I've been sitting on this episode for quite a while. So I'm recording my normal night, or this is going to get released my normal night just to buy me enough time to get more work done. So knowing me, that's the plan. And huge shout out to the 2OC podcast, Alan. Thank you, homie. You saved this audio for me, dude. So much love and much appreciation, dude. So those guys, find those guys, subscribe to them. I'll get back to my regular show next week, guys. But again, find me at For the Villain on Twitter, at Comic_Syndicate on Instagram. Please hit me up and follow these people. If you guys were ever a fan of Batman Beyond, please jump in, listen to the interview, let me know what you think. I will catch you guys next week. Listen to all these interviews with these great batch of people. And minus one straggler, but he's the artist, which was, again, interesting. But again, we love the hell out of these people. Thank you so much. I'll catch you guys next week. Peace out.
Five and six.
Everybody good?
Yeah. Has the timer started? Someone ask a question.
Hello.
I wanted to ask, what overlap do you see between Sherlock Holmes and Batman?
Well, obviously the first place to start with that is they are the two characters who were known as the world's greatest detective. Then there's me. I wrote them both.
Yeah.
There you go. They're both, you know, not only great detectives, but incredible characters. That's the straight answer. And it's been a real, real honor getting to work with and for both of them.
Bob, believe it or not, the internet existed 20 years ago when
it did.
Batman Beyond came on.
I remember.
And there were forums, and some fans had trouble accepting this show. And I think it was because what they really wanted at the time was, like, because we had seen
Batman
Superman Hour, they wanted probably like a Justice League series. But I think you guys, that first scene with Batman, an older Batman, confronting some thugs, and having trouble with the thugs, and that heartbreaking moment where he picks up a gun. He doesn't use it, but he picks up a gun and turns it on a thug. And that was, and after that, Batman was like, it was a thug. And that was the moment where I was hooked.
Great.
So what, can you talk about the conception process of that scene? Because I think that would, because I think that shows how much you guys understand these, this character and Bruce Wayne.
We
and
all,
Batman.
Everyone who was working on, you know, the team, both the artists and the writers that moved from Batman to Superman to Batman Beyond together, it was really a remarkably consistent group. We all knew these characters really, really well. We all loved these characters, and we weren't going to do anything that wasn't going to honor them and respect them. There was a lot of pre-hate, is what I call it. And when word first got out that we were doing a teenage Batman, it wasn't going to be Bruce Wayne, it was going to be a new Batman, there were a lot of assumptions that it wasn't going to be what people would, that people weren't going to enjoy it. And at, to your story, people came around really quickly because, you know, it was a group of people who really cared. And we weren't going to do anything that wasn't true and respectful. And, you know, Bruce Wayne was still there, and he was still Bruce Wayne. The world was still the world. I hope you all think that it was in good hands.
And Entertainment Weekly gave that two-parter an A. I don't know if you remember.
Sure,
that.
Sure.
So, I have a question. So, I know you wrote the Zeta episode. And
yes.
So, also worked on Zeta Project.
Yes.
I'm curious how, when you wrote that episode, was there intended to back up pilot? Or kind of
right. So, when I wrote the original Zeta episode, it was a standalone episode. No plans to do anything else with it. And then actually, while that episode was still in pre-production, before we shipped the stuff overseas, we were at an Emmys night, and I mentioned to Alan Burnett, hey, you know, that character, that could be his own series. And Alan said, pitch it. And so I went and pitched it to the studio, and they bought it in like one sentence into the pitch. And it all kind of evolved from there. There was never an idea when we first did the episode. In fact, my first pitch for that Zeta story, the robot was destroyed at the end of the episode. And it was Stan Berkowitz who said, why not let him live at the end? Get away. And lucky that that I listened to him.
Did you use any specific source material or, I guess, inspiration to create Batman Beyond?
To create Batman Beyond. Well, you probably all heard the story that Bruce just told at the panel. That the original beginning of this was a mandate from Jamie Kellner, who ran the WB network. It was very much the brand of that network to do young people, college, high school age, and he wanted us to do Batman at a high school age. And the expectation up until this meeting that Bruce was just telling you about was that we would do young Bruce Wayne. But none of us liked that idea because it would violate all the continuity we all knew, that Bruce Wayne was not Batman when he was high school age. And so Bruce suggested this solution, that we go into the future instead. And after that, it all just evolved. Bruce and Glenn talking on their side about the visual look, the references that they wanted in terms of the art style. And meanwhile, we on the writer's side, Alan and Paul and Stan and Rich Vogel and Hillary Bader and myself, we started bouncing around ideas for villains, for stories we could do, what the themes of the thing would be, and we all kind of would put it all together, and this was the show.
How did you get away with some of the more suggestive parts? Like in early on in the show, one of the girls said about one of the guys,
right.
You've never wrestled with him.
I know just the line you mean.
Come on, man. You know that's a little suggestive.
So there are a couple of parts to what I want to answer there. One, we were Warner Brothers Animation. And there is a history at Warner Brothers Animation of letting the humor that we present operate one way for the kids and one way for the adults. And it's not hurting anybody if a joke goes over a kid's head. And that's different from other animation studios, certainly was at that time. The other really good thing that I can share is that we had a great broadcast standards department. They they played along with us. You know, we would have conversations sometimes. Definitely there were times where they had us change a line, you know, like, okay, you can't do that. But they were on board with our goal, which was to do something that was sophisticated and, without excluding the kids, would, you know, invite an older audience in also. And we would negotiate. And sometimes we'd be, all right, let's not do this line, but let's do this line. Or as long as we gave them, like, some cover with, like, all right, well, here's our rationale for it, and they could put it in their files. We accepted this idea, you know, in case the angry letters showed up later. We all were on the same page of why we were doing it.
So when you're developing the concept of an older Bruce Wayne,
yeah.
How much does... This is the most famous older Bruce Wayne story is probably Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
How much did that weigh on what you guys were doing? How much did you maybe draw from other maybe imaginary stories, or was there anything like that? How much did you just say, let's naturally evolve what we've already done on the animated show?
80% of what you saw in terms of, or more, of Batman Beyond was whole cloth. We were following our, you know, our own instincts about what to do with this show. And when you're building new characters, like when we were, you know, creating Terry, you look for contrast between those characters. So if Bruce, you know, if we want to do a new character in Terry who is headstrong and rebellious and, you know, jumping into problems before he understands really what he's doing, then you want to create a Bruce Wayne who is more reserved and cautious and teaching him how to be Batman. So that's how most of it evolved. Absolutely, Dark Knight Returns was on our mind, though. We more on the writer side than the artist side. It's funny, Bruce had recently, when I mentioned this, said that it never really kind of occurred to him at the time, but we were on the writer side talking about it a lot. We were, you know, the idea that where Dark Knight Returns ends is Bruce Wayne training a new generation. We kind of looked at that as an inspiration for what we were doing here. We were kind of doing an alternate version of that story where it left off and we began.
Bob, I have a question. Hi. So as Jeff had mentioned earlier, the episode with the gun, which episode would you say challenged your skills the most as a writer?
Wow. Now, I can only answer for me personally, so it's going to be a limited number, you know, of episodes that I'm drawing from. I can say that the episode Payback was a real tough one to crack.
Okay.
Never really worked out, I think. It's not my favorite episode in terms of stuff that I've written over the years.
Two more minutes.
I mean, Zeta was one that I really tried to push in terms of the themes. You know, like it's kind of a story that hits a lot of stuff that we usually don't do in that universe, and I thought it came out really nicely. But the toughest one, I'll tell you, this isn't exactly your question, but because it's a villain who never showed up on Batman Beyond. But in terms of all the stuff that I did there on you know, all the DCAU shows that I worked on, the Riddler was the hardest villain to write an episode for.
Okay.
The puzzles had to be so intricate. It could never get corny. It could never be something that you'd seen before. It always had to circle back to being about some sort of emotional need. And so Riddler was the character who was the hardest to write. And probably the best training, back to your question, for writing for Sherlock Holmes. Because, you know, more than those Batman episodes, those Sherlock Holmes stories had to be intricate puzzles. Yeah, very difficult to write. And keep it emotional. That's the trick. Anyone can write a complicated puzzle, but a complicated puzzle that stays, you know, rooted in character, that's the trick.
Well, the Mr. Freeze episode was probably one of my favorites,
I personally never got to write Mr. Freeze, but you're absolutely right. That was, and you're talking about going back to Heart of Ice?
I'm talking about that you didn't focus on having Batman, Terry, run through Batman's old rogues gallery and
right.
establish a new one. So,
right.
So we had that one Mr. Freeze, but for the most part, we had a diversified portfolio of a new rogues gallery.
Right. Yeah, like we were saying in the panel, our rule was we weren't going to just bring back Rogues Gallery characters to bring back Rogues Gallery characters. We were, you know, here to do something new. A couple of characters, a very short list, made sense to still be around this 40, 50 years in the future. Mr. Freeze, obviously one of them. Ra's al Ghul, first and foremost. But even then, we had to, you know, find something new to do with it. You're absolutely right. That Mr. Freeze episode, I think, is a great one. That, you know, one of our best. You know, we, that character, you know,
something
right,
I had in cold storage.
Right, going right back to the, you know, the new Mr. Freeze origin story that Paul set up in Heart of Ice. That was always a character that we could draw emotion from. That we, that they, he wasn't just going around punching people. That was pathos. There was always a deep emotional relatable need behind that character. It's always great to write stories for him, and I'm actually kind of sad that I never got to do a Mr. Freeze story.
Is there ever a thought to do like a time travel story to put maybe Terry with Bruce Wayne and his friends, Batman and his family as they were in the original?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I ever played with that, but I can't speak for everyone.
You,
I mean,
some of that in Justice League.
Yeah, Justice League did it, but I don't know if we ever talked about that and Beyond.
But just the core idea of just having like. Go back in time and just hang out with Batman and Robin and
my guess, and again, I don't remember if I wouldn't know if nobody thought of it or talked about it. But it, that doesn't feel like something that would have been right for us to do on the show because we were so eager to make sure this was a new show and not just retreading. One of the really cool things and challenging things about working on the full body of shows, and I was lucky enough to show up just as Superman was starting up, work on the full run of Superman, the WB batch of Batmans that we did, all Batman Beyonds, then going into Justice League, did a bunch of those. We weren't just thinking that we didn't want to do something we'd done before any one of those shows. We never wanted to repeat ourselves across all those shows, including the, you know, whatever it was, 80, you know, roughly number of BTASs that had come before I was there. If you pitched something in that world that we'd ever done, we were like, yeah, we did that on Superman, we did that on, you know, on the old show, and we were always pushing ourselves to try and do something new.
Bob, do you know who wrote Get Away From My Dog?
Get Away From, who wrote that line?
Yeah.
Probably Alan, but it was either Alan or Paul, because they wrote that script.
20 years later, what would Batman Beyond look like today?
I think the time is ripe to do Batman Beyond again right now. I think it's more timely than ever. I think the themes are, you know, we're prescient. You know, we're doing a show about corporate greed and technology run amok and how those two things feed each other, how the people in power in control of technology only become more dangerous because of it. And those are themes that I think are, you know, all the more true, and the disillusionment of the teen generation, that, you know, the world just kind of looks like less and less opportunity in it, and so I think it would be great to do the show right now.
Like a reboot, or maybe a Terry McGinnis doing what Bruce Wayne did in the original.
Oh well, I'm talking about doing a reboot.
I want an animated movie.
Another animated movie. I'm, you know, a lot more involved in live action these days. So personally, I'd love to do a live action series of it.
Ooh, live action movie. Michael Keaton.
Do you have any actors that you thought about?
I don't tend to think that way.
Okay.
You guys obviously do that for us, but no. The realities of getting anything made is
last question.
The studios, in this case Warner Brothers, and whoever the outlets are, if it's for a TV network, if it's for theatrical distribution, there are going to be people way above my pay grade who have very strong opinions about, you know, then you're getting into, you know, who's gonna bring the eyeballs, who's going to get butts in the movie theater seats, and so, or who matches the brand of what they're doing right now. So questions of casting, I may have archetypes, but I don't get into those. Thank you very much, guys.
Awesome. Thanks for
James Tucker, director.
Yay.
Bob Goodman, come with me.
Thanks for your time. That was great. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Mr. Tucker.
Howdy.
Are you ready to announce a new Batman Beyond animated movie? I'm not, no. There is a Blu-ray set remaster that's coming out sometime, I don't know.
Because we did get the Fatal 5 animated movie, which is sort of similar.
You got that because I talked them into using those designs.
Okay.
That's the
only Maybe you can talk them into making an animated movie that looks similar to Batman Beyond.
You know, things happen. I never say never. I mean, I've gotten to go back
I'll
to Brave
that.
And the Bold. I got to do another Brave and the Bold follow-up, which I wasn't expecting. I got to do an Adam West project that I definitely wasn't expecting. They did Justice League, Fatal Five, so...
And the Harley Quinn.
Yeah, well, I didn't do that, but I did work on that, actually, didn't I?
I wanted to ask, you've been involved with Batman Beyond in the animation and number series. When you were a kid, what was your sort of comic geek superhero experience?
Oh, well, it was...
That inspired
well, like, there was a person on who asked a question on the panel today, and they, well, no, it was a Kevin Conroy told the story about people coming up to him and saying that he represented their childhood because a lot of latchkey kids were coming home, and he was the Batman that was on TV. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was Adam West, and it's the exact same thing. Like, you know, that show really inspired everything else I did in life. So,
do you know who directed the musical sequence episode where they go to see the musical, the Batman musical?
Oh yeah, that was Out of the Past. Yeah, that was mine. That set me up for.
Who boarded that sequence?
I did.
That's amazing.
I boarded all the musicals.
Like the Killing Joke.
I did that. I did all the ones in Brave and the Bold. The only one I didn't do was there's a dance number in. Gotham by Gaslight, and I said no. I did the Harley song in Batman Harley. I don't know. I mean, it's not like I'm a choreographer or anything. It's just I like musicals, so.
Yeah.
And no one else seems to want to do them, so.
So how did you combine that to make a balance with the more darker tones of Batman Beyond?
For me, I mean, to me, there's comedy and darkness, and there's darkness and comedy. So it's never, to me, I think you need all those elements to make everything play more. Like, a good horror movie should have a little bit of humor in it somewhere. I think it's just the human experience. We're not all dark, we're not all light, we're all these shades of things. So I never have a problem reconciling humor and really dark stuff. Like, to me, some of the funniest stuff is really dark. So it was never a problem for me. I can go as far silly, well, as Brave and the Bold proved. I can go really dark and I can go really ridiculous, and I don't see a difference. Because life's ridiculous.
Either of those sides, you prefer to be
I don't have a preference. I think I like to switch it up. I like to keep. If I do like Brave and the Bold, if we did a pretty dark episode on one hand, then I'd almost always want to follow it up with something silly. Granted, we didn't do that many dark episodes, but we had a few, I'd say, bleak endings. We did a Doom Patrol episode where we ended with them getting killed, which was a story from the comics. But, you know, if we had done that probably earlier, someone would have said, oh, they had to survive. But no one told us they had to survive, so I'm like, nope, they're dead. And, you know, Chill of the Night was... It was dark, but there was a hope at the end of it. Like, Batman came through something. So I don't consider that a dark... It's not a bleak episode. It might be dark, but it's not bleak. And then there was one called Tornado Tyrant, where Red Tornado has to kill his son, which was real. That's probably the saddest, bleakest episode we did on that series. And so I like to switch it up. I like to do all kinds of tones.
Ace in the Hole.
Excuse me?
The Ace in the Hole episode?
Yes.
So, actually, a really touching story. That reminded me, recently, Tom King did another short story in Ace, very similar thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, from Good Boys, like, yeah, Eisner nominated.
I missed the last
Eisner
part.
Eisner nominated.
Oh!
So, yeah, basically, they deal with Ace being, you know, an abused dog, you know, and so it's curious. Tracing such a touchy subject. Balance again.
It was a very touchy subject. In fact, when we did the board, there was a whole middle section of that show
episode where we saw Ace actually in the dogfight. We actually see him in a real dogfight, and it was boarded and everything. And the network was like, "You can't show this." And that was the whole middle part of our episode. Like, it was the main part of Act B, which were three acts. That was this, because it was setting up what Ace had went through, and it also was going to pay off what he was going to have to do in the third act when he fights the big mutant dog. And they said, "Well, you can't show this." So we had to be very clever. And basically, like Bruce Timm always says, whenever they make us do something because of broadcast standards, the solution is always worse, because we have to come up with things that make the viewer imagine what they're seeing. And so we quickly had to rearrange that board where we were, and every time Ace would lunge, or the dog that he was fighting would lunge toward him, in the original board, he we'd see him bite him. We had to cut away to the audience recoiling in horror. And so we did that several times to fill out the footage we lost. Oh, that was quick. So that had a lot, you know. It turned out to be a great episode, I thought. I wasn't sure about it at first. And I love the flashback where Bruce finds Ace in the alley and the Joker tries to attack him. I thought that was really well done.
Do you, ever try to anticipate what the standards and practices guys are going to say you can't do, or just do what you want to do?
It's kind of arbitrary. On Brave and the Bold, well, on Batman Beyond, the first season, they were very lax, meaning for other reasons, basically our bosses were the BS&P, and so they didn't really bother us. The second season, there was a whole bunch of new people that came in who hated our show, like just automatically hated our show and assumed everything we were doing was too dark, and it was trying to, you know, they had a whole agenda about, you know, being responsible. Nah, that wasn't their agenda. Their agenda was social engineering. They really hated action shows, like, with the passion, especially superhero shows. And they really hated Batman for some reason. But, the second and third seasons, we had to deal with a lot more notes and a lot more changes that came. But we still found ways to work around it.
Do you ever go over artwork or boards with Kirk Ito for, consistency, or just to kind of check things over?
Well, when we were on the series, I was I never boarded for Kirk Gaeta.
Okay.
Dan Reba was my director when I was a storyboard artist. And when Kirk Gaeta did the Return of the Joker, his directing slot on the series opened up, and that's how I became a director. So I never really worked directly with him. One more, I guess.
What are you most...
Wrap it up. One more.
What are you most proud of, looking back on Batman Beyond?
I mean, in hindsight, I said it on the panel, is that it's a thing where that show is a show that's uniquely ours, meaning the people who worked on it, it was our show. Like, other people have done Batman shows, other people have done Justice League shows, other people will do those types of shows again. But Batman Beyond was ours.
Thank you.
So that's what it is.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Dan Berkowitz, writer. Sit down. You got
Hi, everybody. Hello, Stan. How are you doing today?
Good.
Really so, Stan, good. Which pairing do you prefer, Terry and Ace or Terry and Dana?
I like dogs.
I like...
No, I'm kidding. No, I'm referring to Ace the Bat-Hound. You mean between the Royal Flesh Gang? Yeah.
No, it was Ten. I'm sorry, Ten, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why I said Ace.
Well, because you're interested in bestiality?
No? Those are the cards.
I'm kidding.
I like Ten, though.
Dana is less interesting than Ten.
I agree.
Because, you've got the good guy with his girlfriend being associated with criminals. And it would have been very interesting watching him try to balance keeping the girlfriend happy, but also keeping her family in jail. So that would be my preference.
I think they could have worked it out. think it could have.
It would have been fun. I mean, it's almost a sitcom. It's, what you have is almost a sitcom thing where the superhero is with the bad girl, and the bad girl is, you know, always on the verge of going back
into crime. Clever, where they're like fighting with each other and they don't know, and then they're late for their date with each other, and then they both get there at the same time. I was like, man, that's great writing.
Almost Shakespearean.
So I know whenever people think about teen superheroes, Spider-Man's kind of always the prototype.
Yeah.
So like definitely see some influence in it, like Nelson Nash is kind of Flash Thompson type, but he's a different character.
Yeah, I wrote for Spider-Man in 94 and 95 when Stan Lee was on the show.
Oh,
do you remember that version of it?
So I was curious, how much did you lean into it without being a complete imitation of Spider-Man Mitchell? So
how much
did you lean into using the influence of like the little early Stan Lee concepts without being a ripoff or an imitation?
I think that what Stan created was sort of a standard. There was no way around what he did. I mean, he was creating a teenage superhero, and once you step into that territory, it's very hard to make something totally different from what Stan had created. So we tried to be fresh and original. It's not like we sat there looking at old Spider-Man comics for inspiration. I mean, because most of the people who worked on the show, in fact, all of them had once been teenagers, and they would look back on their own experiences to try to make that world seem real. And remember, it's teenagers in the future, too, so.
Stan, if the show was made later, do you think you guys still would have been able to get away with Mad Stan?
With what?
The Mad Stan character.
That was named after me, by the way. You mean as an anarchist that we would have been?
Anarchist, but you know, also a, like a mad bomber terrorist type. You know, before that was a really big buzzword in the world.
I viewed him as sort of an anarchist.
Right. I agree.
And why not have an anarchist? The Joker was certainly an anarchist, so why not have that? The Mad Stan came about because we didn't have a name for him, but we were talking about a character who could get angry about anything and didn't have a specific ideology. So he could get if it were in today's world, he could get equally angry about these damn immigrants coming into the country. Or you get angry about the fact that the immigrants who come in, these innocent immigrants who come in, are treated really badly. But whatever side of the issue he took, he would just blow up about that.
And he loves his dog. That made him, yeah. He had a dog named Boom Boom.
That was also, I had a dog. Had a dog, not a chihuahua, but a Bichon Frise at the time.
What was the most difficult or most challenging part about writing these characters?
You mean the shows in general? Or?
Yeah, what was biggest challenge for you guys? Or for yourself?
Trying to be original, trying to be truthful, trying to avoid cliches, trying to do something different. And I mean, you know, there's a history of, at that time, what would it be, 50 years of comic books at that point? And how do we differentiate ourselves when other writers had been going at it, trying to do new stuff for that many years? From, what, 1938 to 1998, so 60 years, yeah.
Stan, I don't know if you can speak on this at all. Sometimes I hear that creators save their better, fresh ideas and like new villains, for example, for superhero comics, because they don't necessarily want to turn them over to DC or Marvel. But I thought for your show, you guys created some really like indelible, like great rogues, like Ink, Mad Stan, Shriek, all those guys, like some really great villains that I think are, you know, some of the, you know, the best like new villains for that mythos in a while. Can you speak on that at all for your rogues gallery?
Personally, I never held back.
Right.
I always felt like right on the edge, trying as best as I could to think of things. What you might be referring to is Harley Quinn. Is that the reference? Am I getting that?
Not necessarily, but
because Harley was created for the animated series.
And Paul and
Bruce didn't. They put their heart and soul into it, and the compensation they've gotten for it has been,
right,
shall we say, limited.
Right.
Limited to less, I believe, than what they fairly deserve. Although I haven't heard them complain. But in my opinion, had the show been covered by a union that covers character creation, like the Writers Guild, I'm sure they would have done a lot better. But Warner's they've been fairly generous with them.
Okay,
but even so, it could have been better. You're also talking about Siegel and Shuster with Superman,
right?
But clearly Siegel and Shuster did not hold back, and I will tell you that the success of Harley Quinn in mainstream movies is a very clear indication that Bruce and Paul did not hold back either in terms of imagination and creativity.
And you didn't hold back with this show either, clearly.
We didn't. Right. Nobody that I know did. It's just Coca-Cola.
I want to ask a question about New Frontier.
Yes.
That you were involved in. Is that around the time that Darwin Cook was ill?
No. No.
So how did that? Did you work with him before that?
Yeah. I'll have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we sort of worked with him. There's a chance that I'd be either collaborating with him 50-50, or that I would do a draft, mm-hmm. and then he would come back and make his notes, and then I would come back and fix those notes. And that was the relationship he chose. He chose not to collaborate 50-50, but he chose to do that.
Okay.
Are we? Excuse me for a minute. Looks like we're thrown out. Oh no! I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Gary's the boss, at least for today. So.
Was there ever any thought to? Not that you would depict it, but was there any discussion about what a future iteration of the show would look like? Maybe you had Bruce Wayne eventually dies because he's getting up there.
There was never.
And how would Terry come into his own without having to process it?
Well, clearly, I have the story right here. And if Gary,
you just kept going.
And if Gary,
I'm sure we're gonna grab that.
If Gary gives me one more minute, I will tell you the story. Okay.
Okay.
If it were up to me, Bruce would have been killed. Terry would have been all set to just kill whoever killed him. And then when he gets in the suit, he discovers that Bruce's body may be gone, but as with the Lost Soul episode, he would still discover that there is a Siri-like version of Bruce in the suit. So that the artificial intelligence Bruce would still be there. So you'd have the moment where you'd see Bruce die. You'd have Terry, going against the Batman ethos, which is, I'm going to kill somebody. And then you would have the AI version of Bruce holding him back. That's just my thing off the top of my head that I would do.
That's awesome.
Had I been.
Thank you. Awesome. Stan, thank you so much for your time,
man.
Thank
you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Hey, listen, I got nothing to do until about 7 o'clock. So if any of you want to chat any more with me, I'm going to hang around somewhere.
Awesome. Cool. Definitely.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Chris, the poster was at the Granite.
You got 4 minutes with Kevin.
Hey, sir, how you doing?
4 minutes with Kevin.
What's it like?
Sounds like a XXX film.
What's it feel like turning 80?
80?
Well, you are
I'm
that
80.
Man, and it's the 80th year of
Yes, I know. Yeah, I'm 80. I know. Cruel business, huh? It's fun. It's look, I'm lucky to have played a character for 27 years. Are you kidding? All my actor friends hate me.
When they made the show, did they pull you aside and say, okay, we're going to have you play Batman in this new show, but now you're, whatever, 30 years old?
Yeah, they did.
What's your reaction to that?
That's exactly what they said. They said, we've got a new show for you, but you're not the hero anymore. I said, what? What happened? And, you know, you have to recruit a new young guy. And it becomes Will's show. And the dynamic between Bruce and Will is really wonderful. And when we discovered that he's his son, I loved that aspect of it. You know, it gave it so many colors. Look, I get a role in 91, and they had maybe 10 episodes committed to it, and then they ordered maybe 9 more. When you're an actor, you go job to job to job to job. You only know how many you got. You sign a new contract every day you walk into the studio, a brand new contract. So you never know if there's another day coming. So, and then when they buy a second season, you think, oh, great, a second season. And then a third season, yeah. And then a second show, Batman and Robin, and that went for season to season. And then Batman Beyond's a new show, and then the Justice League, and then the direct-to-video movies, and then the games, the Arkham games. So this snowball that started in 91, I had no way of knowing it was going to, you know, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans, you know what I mean? I had no way of knowing that it was going to snowball into this, sitting here with you 27 years later.
When did it resonate for you? Like, wow, where people are loving what we're doing.
When I started getting recognized on the street.
Really?
For doing a voice.
Wow.
Which I had thought was a totally anonymous job.
Yeah.
And for the first couple of years it was. But when people started saying, you're the guy who does Batman. I'd say, how do you know that? And they say, well, everybody knows who's Batman. I go, no, I don't even know who's Batman. How do you know? Or they'll say, you're Kevin Conroy. I'll go, I don't know I'm Kevin Conroy. How do you know I'm Kevin Conroy? I mean, I was not the kind of actor that got recognized. I've always worked. I've worked since I was 17. I've been very lucky. But I never had the kind of career that you recognized me. A few years into Batman, I started getting recognized. I got the police pulling me over on the street in New York. I live in New York. And they do the siren as I'm walking across the street. And I thought, I'm going to get a jaywalking ticket in New York? Are you kidding me? No one gets jaywalking tickets in New York. And he goes, pull over, Batman. And they pulled over and they lowered the window and they said, we want our pictures with Batman.
Awesome.
I thought, how do you guys know? So you ask how I realized it crept up over time when I started getting recognized by total strangers. The TSA guys at the airline. When I go to the airport, they'll go, oh, is there a new Batman show coming? Is that where you're going to LA? You're going to record something new? And I think, how do you know? You know? So it's fun. Yeah, they see the name. They see.
One question, and then we gotta go.
How did your work on Batman the Animated Series prepare you for doing an older Bruce Wayne for Batman Beyond?
How did it prepare me for older Bruce Wayne? I don't think it did.
Okay.
I've had to approach the same man, but age him. The wonderful thing is they didn't have him become a doddery old man. They had him become a powerful lion in winter kind of old man. He's still virile. He's still powerful. He's still strong. But he just doesn't have the tenacity that he had when he was young. He doesn't have the longevity to get through a whole fight, you know, which is why he has to recruit a young guy. But he's still Bruce Wayne. He's still, you know, damn it, Terry, do what I say. He's still Batman. In his spirit, but he knows he needs someone with more longevity to get through a fight that he doesn't have anymore. So he's not a weak old man. He's a very powerful old man.
Do you think he would have been tempted to go in the Lazarus pit?
I do live in the Lazarus pit. That's why I don't age.
Thank you so much for your time.
See you guys.
Pleasure. Good to have
you.
A good one.
Here.
Thank you very much.
4 minutes. Yeah. Sorry, Kelly.
Hi, you guys.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing today?
Really good, thank you. And so it begins. Hey, how's it going?
I just want to, I've been seeing, I think I first interviewed you 10 years ago for
here?
Brave and the Bold. So, yeah, it was here. So I just want to thank you and tell you how grateful I am for the impact.
How nice of you. Thank you very much.
And just giving us the gift you've given us and giving us Kevin Conroy, giving us Mark Hamill.
The gift that keeps on giving. Thank you for that.
And this show is great, too.
I'm so glad. Thank
but
you.
But I had a question.
Please.
You do such a great job of showing, you know, that there is a man underneath this gruff exterior. There's vulnerability. And there is a person who's capable of love. Was there ever a person you thought Bruce fit with the best, be it Andrea Beaumont, Catwoman, Talia, or Wonder Woman?
Wonder Bed.
Andrea Beaumont was
the number one. That one was a great story.
It was a great story. And we got to see a lot of Bruce Wayne's vulnerability in that. And you know, I took that aspect of my job very seriously, which was bringing the emotional aspect of Bruce Wayne and Batman and all the characters, so that there was something not just for the action fans, but there was something for the female viewers as well as the more sensitive male viewers who are interested. Because some guys, as you guys know, just want to see action. They just want to see a fabulous set piece, fantastic scene. But I wanted to find out, where does that come from? Why did that scene come to that? What would break Bruce Wayne's heart? What would get to him? Because after his parents died, he put up a pretty good wall. He did not let himself be vulnerable. He was all about tough, you know, and covering up, right? But I kind of like to dig in there and find out, where's the heart? And I do love that combo.
I forgot about Barbara, too.
Barbara.
Gordon.
Well, that's a whole different...
It's a sore subject.
How did you decide on Will to play kind of Batman 2?
We were very lucky that because of the success of Batman the Animated Series, a lot of actors who worked on that show went out to their agents and said, it's a great experience, and told their actor friends, it's really fun to work with this crew. So when we were casting the next show, a lot of actors reached out and said, I hear it's really fun to work on a Batman show with Andrea Romano and Bruce Timm and those guys. So my talent pool increased by about threefold. And we had an enormous number of people that we could audition for this, which we did. And when we got down to about four or five guys that we really liked for Terry McGinnis, we thought, how are we going to make this decision? Let's have them act with Kevin Conroy. Let's see how that dynamic is. Let's see who sounds really good with him. Let's see who sounds like they could have that wonderful dynamic of... They always kind of messed with each other, right? It wasn't... You know, there are the episodes where Bruce Wayne kind of lets Terry McGinnis get beat up a bit before he steps in and helps him out, right?
Yeah.
And Terry also messes with Bruce a bit because, you know, old man, whatever. And I needed to find the actors that could bring that, knowing that we had Kevin. Kevin was a given. And so when we did the callbacks and had the actors work with Kevin, Will and Kevin just clicked. It was kind of like, well, that, it's like when you put on an outfit and you're like, no, that blouse and those pants look really good together. Better than those three other blouses that I tried on first. And just go, well, that's where we'll go then.
Did they record together?
Yeah.
In the show?
Actually, I was very lucky with that series. Almost entirely, that was an ensemble record, meaning everybody was there at the same time, which was the way I like to work. And it has a practical side, too, recording ensemble, which is if you were all individual actors in an episode with me, we run a scene together and you all have lines, and then we run it a second time, and then you say, I want to run it again and do my character a little bit different. Okay, we run it a third time, and then I got to pick up for you and a pick up for you. We know if we have it, right? We know if we've got the scene. If I'm recording you all by yourself, and 2 weeks later you, and 3 weeks later you, I have to record so many more versions of every line you do to make sure that I can cut it together so it sounds like you were in the room at the same time. So the practical reason is we could run a scene three times and know that we've got it. Move on to the next scene. Otherwise, I have to keep recording and recording.
Okay.
Good.
So for me, one of my favorite moments of Batman Beyond was actually in Justice League episode, the What's a Creature Thing, written by Greg McDuffie, his widow, actually, Charlotte, but I'm going to see her later today.
Excellent. Give her my love if I don't see her.
Good. So that scene, having young Batman, old Batman, and Will, that was much of an interesting experience to direct. I assume it wasn't in real time or, you know, Kempton, where I do the voice, you could do it one at a time?
No, it was ensemble. It was all.
Oh, no, I mean, like, you did do it in real time, like, old, young Batman, and then.
Wow, it's so long ago, I can't tell you. But that's a very interesting thing because, you know, actors who do multiple voices, sometimes, like multiple voices in a specific cartoon, say somebody's cast for three different voices. They may say, first time through, can I just do character A, second time through, character B, third time through, character C. Or some actors say, just let me go back and forth. Let me just do that line, talking to that line, talking to that guy. And oftentimes they're talking to themselves as multiple characters. And some actors prefer to do that. So if they like doing it that way, for example, The Boondocks. I directed Regina King as both Huey and...
Riley.
Thank you, Riley. And she liked to do just one character and then go back and do just the other character. But in other shows, say Rob Paulsen, he would be Yakko Warner and Dr. Scratch and Sniff and Pinky all in the same episode, just recording one line after the other. So it really depended on what the actor was the most comfortable doing.
Andrea, not to say you know better than Chris Nolan, even though you do. This show, you know, that you did the Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul line in Batman Beyond, where you have Talia correcting. Actually, it's Ra's al Ghul, a common mistake. And then Chris Nolan makes the mistake in his films later. Do you know that, like, became a bit of a meme?
I did not know this. That makes me happy.
But
I love that.
Do you like that? You got it right in your show.
We did. Well, when we first started using the name, we realized that it had never been spoken before. It had only been written.
Right.
So nobody had the proper pronunciation. It was kind of like when we decided in Superman to call him Lex Luthor as opposed to Luther.
Yeah.
So like, we just looked at each other, Bruce, Tim, and I went, what should we say, Luthor? He's like, Luthor, okay. And we made the decision, that's what we did. So this was Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, and we just like made a decision, let's call it this. And then, what was it? One of the on-camera DC properties, I want to say maybe, not Flash, what was the one before Flash?
Arrow?
Yeah, Arrow,
yeah.
Ra's al Ghul. And they pronounced it Ra's al Ghul?
Yeah, it was Ra's al Ghul.
Right. So, it's everybody's got their own thing. And I wonder how the fans feel about that. I wonder if, like, damn it, it should be how we first heard it.
I always go back to Batman Beyond, and I pull the clip where Talia's like, actually, it's Ra's al Ghul. A common mistake. Because Terry's the one saying Ra's.
Right. I love
Talia
that.
Corrects.
That makes me happy.
Did anybody ask Denny O'Neill?
I'm sorry, say ask
Did anyone ask Denny O'Neill?
I don't know.
How he
I don't know. And I wonder if there ever was a conscious decision. Because you look at how that's written, R-A-S. It could be said a lot of different ways. Ra's al Ghul, right? It could have had the accent on the middle word. It could have all been different.
So they came up with a rule to say if you're in the league, it's Ra's, and if you're not in the league, it's Ra's.
Oh, I never heard that.
That's what they've been saying lately.
Oh, no kidding. That's interesting.
And they kind of do that on Arrow.
Is Arrow still in production?
It's final season.
Yeah. How many years?
All right.
Eight.
Ready. Thanks, you guys.
Oh,
pleasure.
Great.
Enjoy
Thank
the rest
so
of the con.
Have a great day today. Yes.
Thank you very much. You too.
That is a bit of a
Hello.
Hi.
So, everyone ready?
Yeah.
When I was in college, I saw for the first time movies like Blade Runner and
sure.
Akira. And I realized.
And which one?
Akira.
Okay.
So then I realized your shows like Teen Titans and Batman Beyond kind of prime me for that. So I was curious if that was kind of your influence or inspiration for Batman Beyond. Like
oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm a fan of all that stuff, but I mean, you know, I wouldn't say that I was directly trying to copy them, you know, but the spirit of all of that stuff was definitely an influence on me.
I know the satellite was in the Return of the Joker, very similar to the Hero one.
Oh, well, the animation studio that animated it, animated on Akira.
Oh,
so,
that makes sense. Interesting.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And then you have the Jokers, like the gang.
Sure.
I have a question.
Okay.
So, Batman Beyond, it takes place, you know, later in the future. Was
sure.
Was it easier, or was it more challenging for you to think of that world to animate it?
It was both. I mean, it freed us up from doing a bunch of things, but at the same time, too, we were trying to be true to some of those characters, but not make something cheesy. Like, you know, how do we do these iconic Batman villains, but not just do Son of Joker? So, you know, it was more like we were trying to take the spirit of Batman and do a new version of it. So we kind of approached it more that way.
Okay.
Question?
Did you ever get a sequence that you were like, oh my God, you want this in the artwork? Or
what do you mean?
Well, sort of collaborative. I talked to a lot of writers and artists who work together, and some of the writers imagine stuff that is challenging. Artists will push back on a little bit as far as sequences that are more complex than others?
I mean, all we try to do is do something that we like. All we try to make is the best thing that we can make, and you know, we're fans of the material too. We grew up with the material too. We like this stuff, so we're trying to make the best version of it that we can. So all of it is challenging, all of it is hard, but we just try to make the best version of it we can. So sometimes, you know, we weren't thinking 20 years in the future, you know, I'm not thinking about how I'm going to be here, you know, 20 years later. I'm just focused on the show and just trying to make the best show I can. So sometimes I don't know how to answer that. We're just in the thick of it, and we're just trying to make the show. We were making three shows pretty much at one time. And looking back on it now, I'm like, I don't know how we did it. So it's kind of a blur to me. So I was so immersed in it, that's all I knew. You know, we were kind of, we did Superman, then we started doing that new Adventures of Batman, that new reboot style of Batman, and then we got told we were doing Batman Beyond. So then at one point we were finishing all three at one time, and probably working on Return of the Joker.
Oh, wow.
All at one time. So now I look back on it and I go, I don't know how we did it. Mm-hmm. I literally at one point was looking at color for one show, like color for Superman and color for maybe Batman Beyond. And I was in a chair on wheels and I was kind of rolling back and forth, like approving both shows at one time. So that's kind of how much we were working on at one time. So I wasn't being maybe very reflective about it. I was just like, we're just making a show, you know.
Right.
So I'm glad it turned out great. I'm glad that we're still talking about it today. But I didn't have that sense of we're making history, you know. So
was there anything that was tedious to animate, just a car chase that exploded, for example?
No, nothing is really tedious. It's just, you know, we're working on so many things at so many times. It's like, no, I think we're all kind of having a ball, you know. So I think if we didn't like it, we probably wouldn't have made it, you know. So
was there anything that you liked animating?
such as car chases?
We're not the ones necessarily physically animating it. We're doing it, like, we're working on a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I liked building the world of Batman Beyond. Like, I enjoyed that a lot. So,
visually, where did you get any ideas for that world of future Gotham? Did you pull from any sci-fi movies in particular?
I'll tell you, I was looking at, like, machine parts.
Okay.
And I was taking those machine parts and going, that's what a building looks like.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going, I want to make a future building. I think you're looking at something that's iconic. So you're trying to make it as iconic as the Art Deco stuff, if that makes sense. So, and the challenge is don't make the same thing. Don't repeat yourself. You know, keep trying to challenge yourself and make something new, fresh and new. Anyone?
What's it like seeing the character after 20 years become kind of an accepted version of Batman in the canon?
I mean, it's great, but I mean, at the time, I think a lot of people kind of rejected it, and I know the show wasn't a huge hit in the beginning. I think a lot of people kind of resisted it, and I think maybe when we did Return of the Joker, I think that's when people were like, once we did kind of that flashback sequence, then I think we tied the two universes, the two worlds together. But I felt like there was kind of a lot of resistance to the show in the very beginning. That was my impression of it. But then kind of by the time the show got canceled, everyone was like, we love that show. Why'd you get rid of it? So I feel like every show we get that. Every single show, they hate it in the beginning, and then when it's gone, oh, we loved it. Why'd you stop making it? So
would you say that Batman Beyond was met with the most resistance?
Oh, no. The most resistance? No, let's not go down that.
Like the source of that, just because it was something you guys had created yourselves, it wasn't based on a comic book that fans would have been familiar with, like some of the other shows were just
We were given a you know, they wanted a different take on Batman, and a lot of the takes that they presented, Bruce and Alan were like, we don't like that. But the concept of the future idea did not violate what we already did. So that was the reason why, well, what if we do it in the future? And then Bruce told me, and I said, that sounds great. Let's do it. Because it opened the world up to all these different things we couldn't do before. Batman is pretty rooted to the 40s. Like, Batman was set in like a 40s world that never ended. And I think because of that, that was cool, but it also made it sort of restrictive. And Superman was sort of similar. Superman belonged in his own kind of timeline or universe. But with Batman Beyond, it kind of opened within our continuity. But with Batman Beyond, it opened the world to a lot of different possibilities. So Batman Beyond seemed kind of fun in a different kind of way.
The fans, you said, resisted the show. Do you think part of that was because this wasn't from the comics? It was something
maybe.
That you guys had made up.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
It's a new mythology that you guys have added to Batman rather than something that you were adapting.
Yeah, maybe. But I think what we were doing is we were building on our own mythology by that point, you know, because kind of what Batman was we just took all the best parts of Batman and put it into one cartoon. And now with Batman Beyond, we weren't following anything. You know, we were only following what we created, kind of. Or the direction we chose to take Batman in. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what they were resistant to. But, you know, it was still us. It was still the same core team.
At what point do you have that message and saying, you know, to the fans, you guys can trust us. We love what we've done before. You can trust that we're going to have your best, you know, give you something you're going to like.
I, you know, we're fans. We like comics. We're into this stuff. So a lot of times we're making what we want to see. Like, but I don't think we're thinking about that other part of it. You know, we just I think if we thought something was stupid, we would kind of veto ourselves, you know. Anybody? Anybody?
So it was up to you then to, you know, check and balance yourself for those kinds of.
I mean, DC was involved, and you know, network and stuff like that. I personally wasn't involved with that, so I don't know the full rules on what the restrictions were. I mean, I'm sure we had to ask DC's permission on some stuff, but since I wasn't involved on that level, I just don't remember. I don't remember some of the. I don't remember how much. I don't remember how much input DC had to have in approving certain. Honestly, I just can't remember. So. No, I just don't want, sometimes it sounds like I don't want you to think I'm being evasive about it.
Oh,
I just don't remember.
Yeah. Well,
it's 20 years.
Right.
No, we were just trying to make something cool, something that we liked.
Did you have any input on the remastering for the Blu-ray?
I didn't, because I'm not at Warner anymore, so, you know, I don't. I just found out a lot of stuff today. So people are asking me what's on the Blu-ray, and I'm like, I just heard some of it today. I kind of wish I would have known more, but it was a secret. It was supposed to be.
Seen how good it looks in high definition.
It was just supposed to be revealed today, the announcement of it. So some of the stuff I don't know. So sorry. I mean,
no,
you should ask them if there's going to be more follow up on the press release, but. You guys are finding out about some of it at the same time I am. So.
I guess since it's you lean more into the science fiction aspect with Batman Beyond taking place in the future, I know people who associate Batman with realism, down to earth.
Sure.
Do you have a set of rules of what you could do in this future world? What was the sky?
I don't remember. I don't really remember. I mean, I guess I don't know that I was thinking about it being futuristic that much. You know what I mean? I was just trying to make a cool show. I don't think, like, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not trying to predict the future, so I'm not trying to science-based build the show. Like, it has to be grounded in reality, or the stories don't play, or you don't care about the characters, kind of. So I don't know, I'm not thinking about it, I guess, in that way. I don't know. If we manage to get some stuff right, great, but I think maybe you could be too limited by that, especially with science fiction. I think you could try too hard to be scientifically accurate, and I don't know if that's always the best approach. I think sometimes it's better to come up with a strong story and characters you care about. The science fiction aspect is just the world or the set dressing, so...
So at the time that you were working on Batman Beyond, had you or any other persons on your team looked back to the previous Batman, such as the film, Batman's TV show, or did you want to stay away from that?
Well, no, we were the crew from the animated TV show, so it was...
Oh, the Adam West, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Adam West? Well, we're all fans of it, but I think what we were trying to do was we were building from our continuity. You know what I mean? So
you didn't want to look at it too much for source material.
We're all fans
right.
of it. So, but we're not. you know, you're trying to take your take on it, you know. You're fans of Batman, you're just trying to make the best version of Batman you can, you know. So but yeah, if someone else does it, you don't exactly want to do it, like, you know what I mean? So, but you know, Bruce is a big fan of Adam West. James Tucker is a big fan of Adam West. So,
I know, but yeah, that's why you're done. Glad you're done.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Thanks for going today.
Who didn't you have?
Will.
You got 3 minutes with Will.
How do you go to
3 minutes
three,
with Will.
Three best minutes of your life.
Oh, so, yeah. Will, how's it going, Randy?
How you guys doing? It'll be more than
this. Happy birthday, guys.
Happy 20th, man.
Oh, hey, thank you. I appreciate that.
20 years.
When did that happen? Were you a fan of the animated series like we were? And
huge
were you
fan.
Familiar with the world of them?
A huge fan of the animated series. Awesome. Very familiar with the world.
Okay.
Arguably the greatest animated series of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Batman Beyond was phenomenal. Yeah. Everything about it was amazing. But Batman the Animated Series broke so many molds. There was no cartoony acting that was printed on the black, dark paper. It was just so good. Kevin as Batman, I mean, it was so good that I figured the chances of me even getting a role were so slim that there was no way. But I went in knowing exactly what I was up against because I was such a fan of the show.
Awesome. Andrea talked about how she brought the actors in to work with Kevin. How did you go from, you know, Wayne's World, I guess, to voice acting in this and getting on her radar?
Luck. The true story is that they were casting for Batman Beyond and Bruce Timm's wife was a Boy Meets World fan. So she said, you should bring in Will. I went in and I read, and I think I read again, and I figured there was no way. I mean, there's no... I always tell people that you're coming into your first animated series ever and getting the part of Batman with Andre Romano, Bruce Timm, Kevin Conroy, it's the equivalent of, I've never been in a movie before, okay, now you're starring in a Steven Spielberg film. I mean, it's that big in the animated world. So I figured the chance was between slim and none. And I think there's... As an actor, that almost took all the pressure off. That coupled with not having to play Bruce Wayne. Because you have to go in and get, you know, hey, I've got the mantle of Bruce Wayne on my shoulders. I can honestly look at myself and say I'm the best Terry McGinnis there's ever been. Because I'm the only Terry McGinnis there's ever been. You can't do that with Bruce. So, it's been a ride, that's for sure. I can't believe it's been 20 years, but yeah.
So, Will, you mentioned that Batman Beyond was your first acting role. How did you feel, and what did you do to make the best Terry McGinnis?
I listened to people who knew what they were talking about. You know, we always talk about how the relationship between Bruce and Terry was very similar to the relationship between Kevin and I, because I had never done voice acting before, so he jumped in and really became my mentor, how to sit in the chair, how to emote with just using your voice. I mean, just as an actor, your impulses, and we see this with phenomenal actors all the time who've never done animation, you're sitting in front of the microphone and the person next to you says something, your instinct is to turn and answer them. Well, you can't do that with the microphone in front of you. So little things like that, and then it's been 20 years of him and I being friends and him mentoring me in this side of the industry. So that was obviously hugely helpful. Andre Romano, who is arguably the greatest animation director in history, being your first director and teaching you what to do, what not to do, how to do it, the gentle kind of, she was an actress as well, so the gentle kind of nudge, how to speak to us. Again, you could not have created a better scenario for taking a young actor and teaching him the world than giving me these people to work with. It was just phenomenal.
Since you later went on to actually play Dick Grayson, Nightwing, was that kind of trippy, saying, oh, wait, I've played future sidekick, now I'm going back to play the original one?
It was certainly a trip. It's so funny because Terry and Dick actually have a lot in common when it comes to kind of personality. So there's almost that flippancy with both of them. The difference between Terry and Dick is Terry never had the same kind of grudge he did against Batman. And I think one of the reasons that Dick and Bruce had that is because they were on the battlefield at the same time. So Dick was always trying to, I don't need you, I can one-up you. Terry only had Bruce in his head. He was never actually fighting anybody with him. And I think that really kind of changed the dynamic between the two. So if I kind of can think about that going in, where they're both kind of father figures. You know, Bruce is a father figure to Dick and to Terry, but in very different ways. It's almost like the relationship between the firstborn and then the lastborn. And so it's like Terry's the lastborn who kind of got a little more of the love, where Dick is the firstborn, where it's like, no, if you're gonna inherit this, you're gonna do it my way. And so I think if I came in when I kind of looked at it like that, it was interesting. And I was lastborn in my family, so I kind of knew what that was like. Actually, I take that back. Dick wasn't even the firstborn. Dick was the bastard middle child, which made it even harder for him. But that certainly changed the relationship between the two. But other than that, they still got that kind of funny arrogance about them that really make Dick and Terry kind of very similar. Would love to have seen them fight, frankly. And I gotta hate to say it, but no, I'm not even gonna say it. Here's the thing about Terry is you're never just fighting Terry because he's got Bruce in his head. So you're fighting Terry and Bruce, yeah. And that's a pretty formidable comparison between the two. And the suit hooks to the car. And that's just
So when Batman Beyond was canceled, we had to wait years before we finally got that conclusion. Mm-hmm. How was it for you when you found out we actually get to finish the story?
I have told the story before because it's true. Bruce Timm had never called me. Never called my house in the entire run of the series. And my phone rings, and he goes, "Hey, Will, it's Bruce. I'm sending you a script. Anybody finds out what's in it, I'll kill you. See you Friday." Click. And that was it. And so, and this was pre-internet. This is when you literally had the script delivered to your house. So I have the paper script delivered to my house, and it's just me ringing, okay. And then it was, I mean, nobody was expecting that. So I flipped out. It was awesome. And then it's seeing Kevin again, like, I'm your boy. Yeah, it was pretty great. It was pretty cool. Yeah.
So I watched Batman Beyond for 2 years before I discovered it was actually you as the voice. I watched Boy Meets World religiously. And
okay.
I could not tell that you were the same person.
Yes.
Exactly. We're so used to you sitting crazy Eric Matthews comedy, then Terry's more serious. I was curious, going from that more comedic role of that to something more serious, like action-oriented.
Mm-hmm. It was difficult. It's also the thing that people don't realize is we shot Boy Meets World every Thursday night, and we recorded Batman Beyond every Thursday morning. So I went from Batman Beyond being that serious thing right to Eric Matthews in front of the audience. And to make it worse, this is another true story. I haven't told this at all today. The last episode of Batman Beyond recorded in the morning that the last episode of Boy Meets World filmed.
Oh, wow.
So both of my shows ended on exactly the same Thursday. It was a tough Thursday. We went back for Batman Beyond to do a lot more. And, you know, we still had ADR for years and all that kind of stuff. But it was both shows ended on the same day. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about a Batman Beyond, what that would look like if an older Terry were to take on a younger...
It's so funny. We were just talking about that in the other. I joked because Kevin said you hit 40 in the industry and then they make you 80. And I said yes. And I'm now announcing Batman Beyond. Where now that I'm 42, Terry is now 85, and he's taken on a new adventure. I'm not sure Terry would have taken an apprentice. I'm rapping. We're talking apprentices. Because Terry looked at Bruce's life and said there's things about Bruce's life I don't want, and I think Terry and Dana got married. So I think he's going to have kids and all that good stuff. And at that point, you might have to give up the cowl. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay. So I have a really quick last question.
Yes.
So
have we met before? We've met before, haven't we?
No,
he's very
never
familiar
met.
To me.
This is my first interview.
Okay.
But it's nice to meet you. Anyway, Batman has been established. What makes Terry so endearing?
I frankly think it's because they took Batman and they put him in high school.
Okay.
And so I think a lot of high school kids were able to relate to that. You know, he wasn't the 25 or 30-year-old billionaire playboy. He was a guy who lived on the wrong side of the tracks, who came from kind of a broken home and was able to grow up to become Batman. He was still dealing with getting dates, going to prom, bullying in school, drug use with slappers. I mean, they were really kind of hitting all these themes that are still relevant today. And anytime a kid can look at a superhero and go, that's possible for me. And that's the thing that why Batman endures, because Batman doesn't have superpowers. He's not Superman who's come down from another planet to save all us mortals. He's a guy who just goes and does what he has to do. So to take that and make him a kid, I think, is the thing that makes people go, oh my God, I really can. I can become Batman.
Right.
Which is cool.
Awesome.
I did. So anybody can?
Awesome. Great stories, dude. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you guys so much. Have a great Comic-Con.
Yeah,
I'm glad that he allowed me 4 minutes to sit and talk. and we'll go from there.
Dude, pleasure. Love the show, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Great job, the whole time crew, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
You guys have fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right, guys, that was a long one, but a good one. Feel free to jump in. Social media, hit them up. Feel free to hit me up at For the Villain on Twitter at @comic_syndicate. Huge shout out to Alan again. Thank you, homie, for the audio. I had to sit on this one for a bit just to buy myself enough time for my birthday weekend where I'm going to take a break. So I think I deserve it. I'll catch you guys next week one more time. Peace out.